Well, hi everyone, it's Simon Smart from the CPX podcast, and today I'm talking with Carolyn Steadman. Well, more than 30 years ago, Carolyn, then the mother of two of her own children, heard a radio interview about the desperate need for foster carers. Well, she scribbled down the number and that night talked to her husband, and soon they were enrolled in a 10-week course to learn about being foster parents. In the years since, Carolyn has raised six of her own children. She's run a family daycare centre and been the foster mother to over 60 children. This has shaped much of her life and the life of her family, and she's here to talk about the experience today. Carolyn, thanks so much for coming in.
It's a pleasure. It's lovely to be here.
You must really love little children. What is it about them that gives you so much joy?
I do love little children, Simon, and even though I'm 62, I'm still drawn to prams and always have a peek in at new babies and say I'm the one that's there saying, oh, can I have a nurse? What draws me to them? I don't know. I think a feeling of their helplessness, and I just love them.
Mm. Well, mostly the children that come to you, it's fair to say, come out of very grim circumstances. There's a few that don't, but many do. Can you describe the sort of environment that these children are typically coming from? Often they're young babies and they're arriving from desperate circumstances. What sorts of things are we talking about?
Well, probably 30 years ago when we first started, they came from mostly abusive situations. So they might come with broken limbs, brain injuries, fractured skulls, that sort of thing.
And this is a direct result of the environment they're being brought
right.
up in.
Yeah. Some not so serious injuries, but a long-term neglect. So the children are particularly thin. But more recently, most of the children are drug addicts. And we often have newborns, a week old, few days old, who have come straight from hospital and are on morphine every 6 hours for their heroin addiction. The last baby, in fact, we had was addicted to heroin, methadone and cocaine, and he was a very sick little boy.
Gosh, so what a start to life, Carolyn. They're coming born to addicted parents and therefore addicted mothers, and therefore they
yes.
carry that addiction themselves. What is that? How does that manifest itself?
Well, a lot of people say to me, oh, I suppose they get over it fairly quickly, do they? But it takes about 4 to 6 months of reducing morphine doses every 6 hours, and that's 24 hours a day, so you've got to put the alarm on for the nighttime ones, over that period of time for them to come off it.
Mm. You've told me stories of children coming to you with, you know, injuries and that type of thing and neglect. What are some things that stick in your mind, stories of children like that and the type of, they arrive to you in what sort of state?
Mm. Well, one I particularly remember, a little one who was about somewhere between 14 and 18 months old, so tiny, and she was supposed to have fallen down the caravan steps, but she came with a luminous pink splint, a plaster on one arm, a luminous yellow one on one leg, and a luminous green one on the other leg. So three limbs broken.
Mm.
Yeah, so
mm.
yeah, she was a bit of a
that's a it's hard
a
enough
challenge.
Getting a kid into one of those baby suits without any broken limbs. I bet that was a challenge.
Yes, we didn't use baby suits. Bathing her was a challenge.
Oh, gosh.
Keeping all the plasters dry.
So you've seen a change over the years to this, to where drug problems are. It seemed to be the key issue in the family. Is that what you're saying?
I am, but I'm not saying the abuse has gone away. It
no.
hasn't. But
no.
because with drugs, abuse comes as well, so it's even more of a problem. Instead of just being abused, now you have a drug addiction and you're abused. You might come a drug addicted and you have a brain injury from being shaken. And
you've told me also some heartbreaking stories of where the children, very young children, have been effectively the carers of their younger siblings. How does that happen? Or what circumstances bring that situation?
Well, that's when the parent, it's usually a single parent, isn't able to cope. In fact, I've seen children who have been the carer of their parent. So there's one little girl we had who had been caring for her mother. Her mother was an addict. And she told me once, Mummy was on the bathroom floor for a long, 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 long time. And the department told me that when they found the child and the mother, she was on the bathroom floor and the child had covered her with some little dolly's blankets.
Mm. So they're being brought into a situation where they're having to grow up very, very quickly.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, what is it? How does it make you feel? Or what is it that you most feel when you hear and see and experience these sort of situations?
I feel like crying. Mm-hmm. I feel those poor children have had their childhood taken away from them. And when they come to us, we try very hard to let them be children and let them play and let them not have any worries and let them feel safe and secure and loved. Mm.
You've had many, many children coming and going. Some you've had for short periods of time, I guess,
yes.
And some for much longer. Is that, mm-hmm. is that right? You've had some stay for even a year or two. So they're really forming that very early period in their lives in your home.
They are. They're a member of our family very yeah. much when they've been there for, well, even, I was going to say, when they've been there for 2.5 years and we have had children that long, but even when they've been there a shorter period of time than that, you know, we just fall in love with them as soon as they come through the door. As soon as we open the front door and somebody's there with a baby in their arms, I think, oh, good, it's another one for us all.
Does everyone have that sort of reaction in your family?
Some are more interested than others. And in fact, my second daughter, who has now gone on to do the foster care course, and although she hasn't had a placement yet, she's intending to start fostering herself. So she's loved it.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Well, that's interesting. It obviously hasn't scarred her too much. I'll ask you about the impact on your family a little bit later.
Mm-hmm.
I gather this sort of drug addiction, violence, is a bit new to your, it's not your everyday experience living in a fairly leafy suburb of Sydney.
It wasn't 30 years ago, but it is now. I quite expect people to be drug addicted. And
you're quite at home with that.
Yes, I am.
Nowadays. Well, I bet it was new in those early days, but you've come to see a side of life that isn't yours.
And there have been children who've gone into a voluntary care situation where the mothers have said, take the child for me so I can go into an institution and be rehabilitated. Those mothers know where the child is. Most of the time people don't know where their child is. They know they're in foster care. But to give our family some security, they don't tell them the address, just in case they want to come and get the child or steal from us or blow up our house or whatever.
Sure.
But some parents know where they are, and so therefore I have met these poor drug addicted young women.
Mm. Mm.
So I've had quite a bit to do with a lot of them.
Yes.
Mm.
You draw some links between your Christian faith, your Christian belief, and this life that you've lived caring for these children. What's the link there?
Well, I know I couldn't do it on my own, and I do have quite a strong faith in God, and I know that He helps me with it every day that I have a child. Well, every day of my life anyway, but every day that I have a child, I know that He's there helping me with it, helping me to remain calm and patient and all those sorts of things.
Is there part of the motivation in caring for these kids come out of a Christian commitment as well?
Well, for me, as a Christian, I believe that God gave me good caring skills, and I feel that He expects me to use them for His glory. And so I do foster care for that.
Mm.
Mm.
Right. So this is a sense in which you feel it's your gift.
It is.
Yeah, then it wouldn't be everyone's
Absolutely
gift,
not.
Presumably.
No. Some people have very different gifts, and if they're Christians, they probably feel that God expects them to use those gifts too. But this is mine, and
Well, you're certainly putting it into practice. I think sometimes Christians are accused of not really, they can talk about their faith, but not putting it into practice. Well, I'm sure you're not someone we could accuse of that. But what are you hoping that you're going to give to these children? Often they're small babies; they might not even remember you, presumably. What are you hoping to give them in caring for them?
Well, I know that 90% of them won't remember me. In fact, probably much higher than that. What I'm hoping to give them is, for those weeks or months or years that they're with us, a sense of being loved, being secure, feeling safe, being happy, having joy in their lives, and I've always had in my head that every time I pick a baby up, I'll say a little prayer for it. And most of the times my prayer is that they will eventually know God. And that's what I hope for them. But I know that for me and my Christian faith, I know God's in charge of all that. And when things happen to children, like their return to their drug-addicted parents, who may now be on a methadone program, so there is some improvement. But I worry about them, and I just have to say, you know, God, take that child. I have to give it up and not worry about it.
You've seen some incredibly frustrating situations where children in terrible circumstances have been returned to those circumstances because of the way the system works. You have a bit of a strong feeling about how it should be different.
I believe if parents have a couple of goes at looking after their child and it still falls through again, I think the children should be removed and placed into foster care in an open situation where they have contact with their parents but are in a stable situation.
It's such a precious time of life, isn't it? And it really isn't something to be treated lightly or in these cases with great neglect. At the very least, you'd want that message to come across.
That's right. One particular placement we have had four times.
Right.
So the child came into care, or the children, it was actually twins, came into care, stayed with us for a few months. The case went to court. The magistrate said, yes, return to mum. 6 months later, the children are removed again because of neglect, and mum had abandoned them at that time, back in care, came back to us, and that has happened four times. I don't think that should have happened to those children. I think twice would have been plenty, and then into a permanent, long-term foster placement.
Changing gears slightly, you've had some... There have been some funny moments over the years, haven't there?
And
things you can now, I guess, look back on and laugh at. I remember you telling me about, there's a few of those, but I remember one kid using a child's medical kit showing your children how to shoot up heroin.
Yes.
You wanted to tell us about that?
That was a little girl we had. This was the same little girl who'd covered her mum with the blankets. Yes, one of my own children at that time was young, probably three-ish, and had been given a doctor's kit for her birthday. She wanted to be a nurse or a doctor. And in it, a friend of mine was a pharmacist at the time, and I was telling her about it. She said, I'll give you a syringe so you can make it real so she can give injections to the teddy bears. And then this little girl arrived in the household and came in and saw the doctor's kit, saw the syringe. She said, I know all about them. And she got hold of a Dolly's blanket, put a tourniquet on her upper arm, and then sat there and used the syringe to show us how to inject her arm. She was 2.5.
Well, there we are, a bit of education.
That was a bit of a mind-opening experience for our three-year-old. Well, and the rest of the family too, and me. I'm thinking, oh my goodness, this poor little girl. One day she was setting the table for me, and she always wanted to help. So I said to her, you can put the salt and pepper on the table. She said, oh, I know all about pepper. I said, what do you know about pepper, darling? And she said, I know about pepper. She said, one day a man came to our front door and threw pepper in my mum's eyes. I said, oh, well, we won't do that with our pepper. We'll just put it on the table.
Was she the one who, when she heard the siren?
That's her.
Right, tell us that story.
Driving down the Pacific Highway one day, we were approaching Chatswood, and she said, I know where we are, Carolyn. And I said, where are we? She said, we're in Chatswood. We come here for methadone. And I said, oh, do you? That's interesting. And as we went on a little bit further, she saw a fire. It was a red car. It was a vehicle, not a big tanker truck thing that they put fires out with, but the fire officer probably goes in it. And she was down on the back seat, and I lying down the back of the car. And I said to her, sort of with her head right down, what are you doing down there? What's the matter? And she said, I've just seen the cops. I'm hiding from the cops. Oh, dear, what a life you've had.
It's tragic and funny, I guess, in one sense. What about the kid who came to you as a boy and discovered it wasn't the case?
Oh, yes, the department rang us and asked us, could we have this dear little boy? He was just a couple of weeks old at the time, and when I brought him in, and he'd been at the doc's office for some time, so I knew he probably was ready for a nappy change. I brought him in and took his nappy off, and he wasn't a boy, he was a girl.
Had a quick name change.
Yes, rang them up, and his name, his surname and Christian name sort of could have been turned around. And
so that was the mix-up.
That was the mix-up, yes.
I'm glad we cleared that one up.
Yes.
Letting go of these kids must be very painful. Have you just developed a hard heart at this, or how do you do it if you get attached to them?
Do you think I've developed a heart of anything?
I suspect not.
No. No, we all cry, and it is a very hard time. I mean, I could sit and tell you about a particular departure that broke our hearts and we still feel sad about, but yeah.
You've had some contact with, you know, it's usually and appropriately not the case that you see them in an ongoing sense, but you have had some good stories, haven't you?
One girl,
I think it was, who came back to see your house.
Yes.
and where she grew up.
That's
that
right. We had her when she was a baby, when she was a few months old until she was about 14 months, something like that. And she was then, her own mother was a drug addict and she overdosed and died. She then became available for adoption. Her own relatives were checked out, grandma and aunties, could they take another child in, but nobody could. So she was available for adoption and she was adopted. Her adoptive parents didn't tell her straight off that she was an adopted child. And when she was 12 years of age, they decided it was time to tell her. So they sat her down and said that she'd been adopted. And her first question was, how old was I when you got me? And they said, you were 14 months old. And she said, well, where was I until I was 14 months old? And her mother said to her, you were with the Stedmans, a family who live not too far away. And she said, I'd like to meet them. And so the adoptive mum rang me and said, she wants to come back and see you. So she came and she wanted to see which room she slept in, what toys she played with, where she ate her breakfast, and did we have any photographs of her. And we happened to have 14 photographs of her, so we got prints of all those, and yeah, that was nice. And I haven't seen her since then. That was about 18 months ago or so. But I wouldn't be surprised if she wants to just make contact again.
It's important filling the gaps in someone's story, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes.
That was a good, great moment for her, no doubt, and for you as well.
Yes, and the department insist upon now, these days, what they call a life storybook, so that you do take photographs of a child when they're with you so they don't have any gaps in their lives.
Mm. Mm. Your family, no doubt, bore a great cost in this. You had six children of your own. Some of your energy would have been taken away from them and to other children. Could you speak briefly about the bit of the cost, but also what you might see as a benefit to your children in this experience and your marriage and so on?
Yes, well, there certainly were times when our children resented having a foster child in the family. Like, we'd all be at the park with a group of friends and the foster child would be little and overtired and needing to go home. So it would either mean, if it was local, one of us could take the baby home and the other, and my husband perhaps would stay with our mob. But often it'd be the whole family would have to go home because the foster child needed to go to bed. And I know they felt that wasn't fair. Everybody else was still at the park, but they couldn't be. So there were times like that. But they're all adults now, and no one has ever said, I mean, and they would tell me, they tell me exactly what they think. No one has ever said, I wish you had never done it. I think it gave particularly all of our kids a very realistic idea of what it's like to have a new baby in your family. No one thought that when they had a baby that it would sleep for 4 hours and then wake up and have another little feed and go back to sleep again.
I could have done with in some ways.
Right. Well, they mostly had heroin addicts who screamed all the time. So they think their own babies have been wonderfully good because they did sleep for a few hours. So yes, that was a cost, and I don't think it there was a cost on in our marriage. I think it's probably strengthened our marriage. David has been incredibly supportive. He's always the one, he's a lighter sleeper than me, so he's always the one that when the alarm went off to give the next morphine dose, he would always be the one that would hear it and go and get the morphine, or, you know, if the baby woke in the night, well, the baby's all awake in the night, he'd be the one who hears it and he'd go get up and warm the bottle, get the baby, bring it to me, shake me vigorously so I'd wake up, and then I'd take over and he'd hop back into bed and go back to sleep.
So great support.
It has been, yes, a real...
it's a team effort,
team
I guess,
effort.
With
yes,
the whole family.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, finally, Carolyn, what, as you reflect on these years in foster caring, and you haven't finished, you're continuing to do it, What have you gained personally from it?
I think for me, again, tremendous faith in God, because I know that I've had such a lot of support and love from God doing this. Yeah, I suppose a lot of people say to me, and it makes me feel uncomfortable, "Oh, St. Carolyn, that's what we should call you."
And I think.
And I hate it. Mm. I hate it because I just see myself, I'm just another mother in the kitchen with bare feet and trackie pants on, looking after kids and changing dirty nappies and all that sort of thing. I mean, it's not that special to do that. But I guess I just have a capacity. I don't need much sleep, so I have a capacity to do it, and I thank God for it.
I'm sure we can all be grateful for that as well, and for your incredible commitment to these kids.
And there is still such a need in the community for foster parents. I have to add that little bit in.
Get that plug in. Yeah. So you'd encourage people to definitely, there's a need there, definitely.
There's a need there, definitely. If that's what you like to do, if you enjoy mothering and cuddling babies, do it.
Well, thanks so much for coming in. Really great, inspiring story, Carolyn, and I appreciate hearing it.
It's a pleasure.